Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have a fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favor to ask, and that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends, and don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey, guys. You're now listening to The Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA licensed football coach, coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right, guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and I've got a very special guest with me today. The collision of two podcasts coming together, really. My guest today is a really interesting character. Loves a bit of magic, but I'm going to hand over to him now. So, Mark, good afternoon. How are you, man?
Yeah, pretty good. Yeah. Collaboration of two podcasts. The magic thing, man. I don't know where that's come from. I don't know where it has, but I just like to try and make people smile.
I think that's so important, so, especially in today's day. But, you know, Mark, before we get into the real thick of the conversation and understanding where the origination of this magic fascination came in. Maybe just a little bit about you, who you are, what you do, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, so a licensed coach. I've been coaching now for 30 plus years. And I suppose if you wind it all the way back, a failed footballer like lots of people on this call. There's no sob stories about injuries and things. It was just I wasn't good enough, weren't at the level, unfortunately. But for me, it was what's the next best thing. So I know that I had this real intrinsic desire and passion for football. You know, my memories of playing in the back garden in amongst two oak trees for goals and all of this wonderful stuff. It was just amazing. I just remember having that chat with the careers advisor when I was about 15, and it was this the old lady with glasses, and she looked at me across the table and said, what do you want to do when you leave school? And to me, it was, I just want to do something involved in football, definitely football, to which she nearly fell off the chair, I think. And when she finally pulled herself together, she said, you know, you need to just focus on a real job. And at that stage, when you're 15 and you're being confronted by an adult in your mind, that they are, talking with a lot of experience and wisdom, then it's kind of, wow, she's right. She must be right. I need to get a real job, whatever the real job is. So I kind of parked the football stuff and went and did sales jobs and building sites and cleaning jobs and all of these things. But it just wasn't for me. I wasn't feeling fulfilled. And then explored the coaching qualification route. So back then it was the prelim. I don't know if you remember the prelim, Yaz. Probably a bit too young. Yeah, it's the UEFA C today, or equivalent of. So it went from prelim, then had to convert it to UEFA B part two, then it became the coaching certificate and so on. So we know it today as the UEFA C.
When the world was black and white, yeah?
Yeah, it was, yeah. And do you know what's interesting about that, Yaz, and I'm experiencing it now, is that the amount of detail that went into those courses. And I mean, I remember a guy called Jim Kalman, who Brendan Rodgers talks fondly of Jim as one of the best coaches that he's worked with. But I remember a real freezing cold night, Palmer Park Stadium in Reading. Those who that live in Reading will know it. And we went along the line of blowing our whistles. Like, blowing your whistle properly as a coach. And even now I see some young coaches that, you know, just kind of put it to their lips and nothing happens. And like just a real sharp blow. It was, you think about it now, 20 of us in a line and you just had to go up and see how loud you could blow the whistle. But there was a technical practice then as well. So I remember it was probably about 35, 40 minutes on an outside hook, really breaking down the mechanics of that and your non-kicking foot and where your other foot goes and your knees and your ankles and all of this stuff that I think probably missed on the courses today. Went on from there, ended up working in community football, a variety of clubs locally to me. Started up my own sort of coaching business at the time. And then in amongst this, I'm doing my UA for B, etc., and all of the other courses that sort of surround that. And then end up at Reading Football Club, where I had an amazing 5 years, a real wonderful experience with some amazing coaches, the likes of Brendan, who I've mentioned, who ironically Brendan Rodgers was, I think, the under-14s coach at the time at Reading. Steve Keane and Alan Pardew, Nick Hammond, Kevin Dillon, you know, it was a real wealth of experience there to learn from. So that was amazing. Worked at the FA for 10 years, 10 fabulous years with the English Football Association. By this time I got to the Welsh A licence course and an English A licence course, which were totally different, but again, very useful, amazing courses. And then through my sort of latter years at the FA, I became a CCD, a coach, county coach developer. So actually delivering the level one as it was then, two, and the UA for B as well. Unfortunately left there due to a sort of change in direction at the FA, and here at Arsenal today, which is, an absolutely amazing football club steeped in wonderful history. So that's kind of my journey, Yaz, in a nutshell.
And there's so much things that we can dive into there. So I'm really interested. Obviously, let's go back to that prelim in the black and white days, yeah. Probably before I was born. I think it's a common conversation that we have with a lot of people at the moment around how coach education has changed, the direction of it, the content involved. I recently saw a post on social media that talked about why the FA going down the route of giving coaches less learning opportunities, less education. And my response to it fundamentally was that I don't agree with that. What I'd say is that it's just the content is different nowadays. So I guess one of the observations that's also kind of come up off the back of the content changing over the years, certainly in the last 15 years since I've been coaching, and obviously probably more so in the last 30 years that you've been involved in it. What for you are the major changes, and what for you are the biggest things that maybe were the pros, if you like, of back then, and maybe comparing that to what maybe today's coaches might be missing out on, and vice versa? What do you think that maybe has changed in a, for the better? What do you think has changed for the worse over that time frame?
I think probably for the better is, you know, the game's more exposed now. You look at social media, you know, we've got so many wonderful opportunities to catch up on stuff and to learn, and just to sort of dive into some of this richness from all over the world, just by a click of a button, essentially, where, you know, years ago, I just remember having to buy all sorts of different resources and books and videos and all of this kind of stuff. So that side of things, I think, is definitely for the betterment. I think for me, it's a societal thing. I think the game has changed, which we know due to evolution. We can't come away from that. But I don't know if you've noticed it, but certainly on courses, and I'm going back to those black and white days, but, you know, everyone would join in the sessions, unless you were sort of really, really injured. You would join in the sessions and take part. And I understand that there's different learning preferences, and mine would be probably as a kinesthetic preference, is to sort of join in and really feel the session. But also, what's concerning is the dropout rate. I think it's about under 14s. This high percentage of sort of boys and girls dropping out of the game. Whereas, you know, we would, or I'm speaking for myself, played until sort of mid-30s, early 40s. It just seems that certain coaches now almost foregoing a playing career at any level to get into coaching from an early age. And I think then perhaps the detriment to that is, you know, actually being involved and feeling the game from that point of view versus, you know, what you're taking from online.
I think it's quite an interesting one, because obviously we spoke about this recently, a few weeks back, about the comments that came out regarding Harry Redknapp and, you know, his observations that, you know, half the coaches nowadays, they can't play. And I think a lot of that's been misinterpreted, but I think the message that he was, in my opinion, that he was trying to suggest was that it's not that coaches, that, you know, they don't play the game. They just, they can't play the game from a standpoint of they don't even know how to play it. And, you know, they've not experienced enough of the game to be able to really have an understanding of what to expect from players. And I think that's probably one of the challenges that exists. And it kind of, I guess, alludes slightly to what you're saying, right? In the fact that if you've not experienced it enough, how do you begin to start coaching it? Because I think one of the observations from me in my journey in particular, and I've always said I consider myself quite fortunate having started my journey when I did, especially now seeing where things have developed to, and not to say there's been a bad change, but I think there's things that I certainly felt like I was given as part of my education coming through that probably is lacking now, not because it's not important, but because I think just the world has changed in terms of what they consider to be important as within the game in particular. I think for the better, in the sense that I think the way coach education is, and I think just the way sport is now in terms of youth development in particular, is very much more so about allowing players to express and create more, you know, for lack of a better way of describing it, more intelligent individuals that are understanding of the context that they're involved in. They're able to consciously make more decisions because they understand the context they're involved in. And there's less emphasis on one right way of doing things, which I think is fantastic. I think my only concern at some points is that, at least when I was coming through in my coach education, there was a reference point to a right way, which might have often been referred to as the right way. But there was something to refer back to and have as a backup, if you like, if you weren't able to explore outside of the framework of what that right way was. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, definitely. It's a really interesting one, and I think probably, you know, listening to Harry's comments there, going back to that, I think probably taken out of context slightly. And, you know, I don't think he's suggesting that everyone should have played 500 games in the Premier League. But it is just slightly alarming that, the players are sort of foregoing that that playing career. But having said that, you know, society's changed. It does look and feel different. I think if you look at where we sit now, I mean, I was doing a session probably about a month ago now, and I got the boys in there, probably under 12s. It was almost like a guest session that I did. And I said, right, you choose your own positions where you want to play. And they shaped up, and I said to one of the boys, hold on a minute, where is it you're playing? And he said, I'm a false nine. It's the first time I heard it said back to me that someone's chosen that as a position that they wanted to play in. And I just had to take a step back and thought, wow, this is a generation, and I'm living in this generation where we've got, you know, a left back at Arsenal that's actively encouraged to, you know, play as a number four or number 10 in the same game, in the same phase of play. You know, gone are those days where as a left back, you know, out wide or the edge of the box, or, you know, you need to be involved in different ways. You need to be able to understand and have an appreciation of different positions. I think like the language has changed now, hasn't it, in terms of positions on the pitch and even their language. We talk about forgoing a football career, but, you know, this FIFA generation that we're in, everyone that I've coached plays FIFA or will know what FIFA is. You know, we talk about in our sessions cutbacks and sweaty finishes. You know, sweaty was never a term that we would have used growing up, but through FIFA they understand what that is. Cams and inverted wingers and all of this stuff. So I think this wonderful generation that we're in, I think as practitioners, we need to be able to probably be curious, not furious. So rather than us dictating you know, the sort of going back to the talk and chalk generation, whereas, you know, I talk, you listen, just really listening to the people that are in front of us and listen to what they're saying and just have an understanding of where they are. And I think it is a real eclectic mix of skills that we need as practitioners now. I think it's no longer that stuff that happens on the green stuff. You need more now. You need to understand certainly the ages and stages of the boys or girls that you're coaching, where they are psychologically as well, you know, socially, just a greater understanding of the people in front of you to enable you then to be able to put on a session that kind of benefits everyone.
I think it's a great point. It just reminds me of a conversation I was literally having just yesterday with a coach. And I think, you know, one of the things I say that is, I think the today's generation of coaches coming through, not necessarily the guys that are working in today's generation, but the guys that are coming through as coaches in this generation, I don't think there's enough of an appreciation or an effort made to actually genuinely understand what the players understand first. You know, because it for me, it's almost like, well, if I don't understand what you already know, how do I know I'm not covering old ground? Yeah. And more specifically, how do I know I'm not only not covering old ground, because that's not always a bad thing, but how do I know I'm now tailoring the information you're about to get based on where you're at if I don't actually know what you know? And it's something I've worked on for the last maybe 6-7 years in particular, really just been, right, how do I get better at understanding the players? And you know, as time's gone on and developed, I think there's so many different ways we can look at it. But we've all got different ways in which we want to work. And the two things that always come back to me is saying, oh yeah, these are two key things for me. First one is for a coach to think about, well, if I'm going to ask you a question, I think the coach needs to first ask themselves, well, what are you hoping to find out by asking this question? Because if you can start asking yourself what you're hoping to find out by asking the question, then you'll probably ask better questions. You know, when we do get to the end of the session, I'm quite critical of the idea that we're going to do a debrief and I'm going to ask you, right, what did we learn today? Well, if as a coach you happen to ask that at the end of the session, then what the hell have you been watching in the last hour? Because your eyes should be telling you what they've been learning or what they've been able to achieve and implement and what you should be doing. And coming back to your phrase about be curious, not furious, you know, find out what they know, why they know and what they think and why they think it. And then the second piece, you know, kind of linking back into something that you talked about earlier, to what having, you know, that kinesthetic approach to learning and that being almost like a preference for you. I actually think, you know, I think everyone learns through seeing and doing. And, you know, they talk about picture paints 1,000 words, but a video tells a lot more, right? So the moving image for me, you know, I guess if the three core principles that have come back to me in my coaching style and philosophy, if you like, it's skillful and articulate question and answer, right? So are you asking the right questions? And you can only do that by knowing what it is that you want to go after. The second piece is practices have to maintain an idea, an element of realism or an element of direction in order to create realism. And then, you know, the third piece within that is almost show and tell. And what I mean by that is coaches getting comfortable with the idea of not just telling players what to do, but actually showing players and not in some way, shape or form. It might be me demonstrating it, which kind of, you know, brings back that question of, well, can the coach do it themselves? And do they have to be able to do it? And in my opinion, they don't have to be able to do it. Mm-hmm. But they need to be considerate and aware enough to understand that if they're not able to do it, right, how can they be resourceful around what's in front of them? So actually, I know that this player is able to do it, but actually don't make the assumption that just because this player is able to do it, they know what you want them to do. Because then that comes back to the learning styles, right? And understanding that actually the person that might be able to do it the best might be the person that needs to see it first. But someone else who might not necessarily be able to do it the best can actually understand what you're looking for without actually having a demonstration in front of them. And then people think they're actually saving time by just telling players what to do and not giving them a demonstration. But 9 times out of 10, my observations show me that actually you tell players what to do, they don't get it. You're going to end up demonstrating anyway. So why don't you just start with the show and tell, talk them through what you're trying to show them. And you kind of, you know, kill 2 birds with 1 stone in some respect. So I guess I'm curious to understand, right, you know, what are some core principles in the way that you work and where have those, I guess, start to come from?
Yeah, I think since going into sort of academia, working at the FA, I was fortunate to do a post-grad PG cert in sports coaching. And then I followed that up by myself to do a master's in the same subject, and then really doing a deep dive into, you know, some of the things that you've just mentioned then. Which I would have kind of skirted around before. So even the players in this environment that I work in now, you know, if you look at, there's lots of, certainly in the foundation phase, unconscious competence. So the ability to understand something without conscious reasoning. So do I need to go in and explain X, Y, and Z? They can do it. They probably don't need me to go through lots of detail explaining how they've done it and what it, and I actually said to one of the boys, you know, do you realize, you know, that little bit that you did, you used your body just to bump someone away, to get turned, to give yourself an extra yard or two, you know, did you realize how you did that? He said, did what? Like, he didn't know. It was a you know, unconscious thing, but the competence at the end of it. So you know, and then within a group, you know, you think about a grassroots session, you'll have the, you know, some conscious competence in there. So, yeah, you know, I get what you're wanting me to do. I understand it and I can execute it. And then some conscious incompetence. So there's a real mix. And I think the art is for us just to have that understanding. And there'll be coaches that are listening to this going, hold on a minute, Mark, I've got an hour session. We're on an AstroTurf. We get on there as soon as the other ones get off. We haven't got time. But if you just take time just to do some background work, you know, and just try and gain a greater understanding of the players that you're working with, or even, you know, how they best learn. You know, I always give Sally Needham a shout out. Sally's doing a doctorate now. We work together at the FA, but one of the things that she spoke a lot about was the polyvagal theory and Dr. Stephen Porges' fight, flight and freeze and shut down. And that is that kind of gut feeling, that vagal nerve that goes from your stomach right up to your brain. And in a group, if you picture now getting a group of 15 boys in or 15 girls in, you know, some will be focused on you, some will be gravitating towards the back of the group, messing about a little bit, some will be looking up and counting how many aeroplanes they can see in the next minute. So they're kind of telling you with their body, you know, what sort of learners they are, and some will be fidgeting and telling you, do you know what, you're talking too much, kind of get it, let's get going. And all of this stuff, if you take the time to kind of assess that. And I think that comes with experience, definitely for me, and just a bit of skill and a bit of sort of education, really. But that's why I said it's a real holistic sort of view of coaching, really, as opposed to me in my early days of just, you know, writing down a session, whoever it was from. It might have been a session that Barcelona did, and I've taken it from a book at the time and tried to transplant it into my under nine session and realize, and trying to gain an understanding of why they can't do it. But yeah, I think, yeah, that's what I mean by that.
Yeah, no, it's quite interesting, because obviously, you know, I think as we go through the qualification, especially now, like I said, the way I think about it now is almost like people coming through now, they kind of left. They're left with a bit of a creative freedom to kind of explore what they want it to look like, right? And again, I go back to what I said earlier. I think, you know, I consider myself quite fortunate in the fact that I've gone through some part of my journey in having some clear guidance and structure, and I've gone through some part of my journey where it's been like, well, almost, well, what do you think? But not what do you think without any real rigor behind it. Actually, why do you think that? So I think there's been that element of kind of creative freedom to kind of explore what kind of coach I want to be, which would have happened naturally. And I think, because that was one of the biggest criticisms that used to come back, right? It's almost, well, you want me to coach in a particular way, but when I go back to my club, this is not how I'm going to work. Yeah. I'm just doing this to get through the course. But I think, again, it gave us a foundation and a kind of a structure to go back to if we needed that, which I think probably the modern day coach learner coming through now probably doesn't have that to fall back on.
Yeah.
100%. So the question sometimes comes back, well, where do we get that information? Well, it's not about where do we get that information. I think it's, well, what do you think your players need and why do you think that? Mm-hmm. And I always go back to the idea of just plain and simple. Look, you don't have to justify yourself to me to try and get me to agree with you. But you've got to give me something that I can accept. Because if I can't accept it, then you probably haven't got a strong enough argument as to why you're doing it. And if you don't know why you're doing what you're doing, then maybe there's some things that you need to consider and think about too, right? Because it's not to say that what you're doing is right or wrong, but actually, how do you know whether it is right or wrong if you haven't gone through the process of examining it? And you might find in situations that you've examined it, you go through the rigor of doing all of that, and nothing changes. But I highly doubt that will be the case.
Yeah. I think, you know, also from my time, and I'm a bit older now, but I think creating, I know a lot's talked about creating positive environments, etc. But certainly for me, where I sit now, and having the team of coaches that we work with, they're almost going through. They're a lot younger than me, and I look at it, and you take ego out of it, right? I don't coach as much now. I manage a team of coaches, so to speak, because I think they're closer. Some of the ones that we've employed here are closer to the age of the kids that we coach. They're more trendier than me. The words they use are probably cooler than the words that I use. So you take ego out of it and go, right, let's plunk them in there. But then understanding that they're still going through this cognitive apprenticeship, right? So then it's up to me and the team to create that environment where we can make their thoughts visible. So I mean, through coaching, through the power of reflection, you know. And we had a coach the other day on reflection, a day later, said, you know what, Mark, I didn't help them enough in that 20-minute period. And I was like, wow. We've created an environment where someone feels safe to say that without ridicule or anything like that. I don't think on reflection I helped them enough in that period. Well, that is massive. And I would much prefer that than someone saying, no, 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 and point the finger. I think you have to look inside your own tracksuit first. So reflection is massive, articulation, exploration, modeling, scaffolding, all of these wonderful things, but just creating this wonderful environment through trust, through emotional intelligence, so empathy, etc., you know, where you can explore this and go through this journey together. And they are allowed then to come to you with ideas and also, you know, make mistakes as well. So all of that, I think, is really important. And I just wish, I don't know, that I had an environment like that to be nurtured in and to grow when I was probably about 20 years younger.
Yeah. I think you're spot on. I think, you know, we definitely have moved towards a world where everything is a lot more creating positive environments and safe environments for people to kind of be vulnerable. And I think that's part of coaching, right? I think, you know, good coaches are able to be vulnerable to the point where they know what they know and they understand maybe what they need to know better, if that makes sense. Yeah. And I think, you know, as long as they're conscious of those things, I think I even say to coaches when I'm working with them, look, your job is not to help players with solutions. Your job is to help players become better at identifying what the problem is that they're dealing with. Because if they understand the problem, then they can come up with some solutions and some ideas around it. But at which point you might dive back into the process and support them with finding those solutions. But if you can get better to start with by helping them identify what problems are and what they look like and what they mean for them, then I believe that, you know, you probably get closer to them becoming more creative around how to solve it themselves. Whereas I think typically, we're very solution-based. Traditionally, we're solution-based in coaching. But then the problem is how well do we help provide context and guidance around what problem is that the solution that we're providing for them is trying to solve? I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I think it depends on what you're sort of going after, doesn't it? I think... you know, we have a plan in place, sort of short and medium, long-term plans, if you like. We've got a philosophy that's it's quite rigid, but in the same time, it's quite flexible, depending on the individual, and for them to use their creativity, and that is contextual, and creativity is what that means to that particular individual, but. I think, we have non-negotiables of what we try and work towards, but then the creativity, the imaginative thinking and everything is so, so important to me within that. But I think it's very difficult if you haven't got some sort of plan, ideology, philosophy, mission, vision, whatever it is, to be able to then take that forward. I just think it can be quite difficult. I think as coaches, as practitioners, we need a point of reference, I think, at times, some a base to work from. Just to gain an understanding, really, of where we're going, what direction we're headed, and more importantly, for the end user, for these players to try and get something out of it. So... yeah, the older I get, Yaz, the more complicated things get, I think. For me, in my head, the things that I'm wrestling with.
So I mean, okay, so let's talk about that. You know, let's talk about your earlier days. You say the more, you know, the older you get,
yeah,
things get complicated. And I think part of that goes back to that old phrase of, right, you know, you don't know what you know, or you don't know what you don't know until you know. So we're always uncovering new things, right? But I think it takes a certain particular type of mindset and an individual to try and really embrace that. So I guess, you know, going back to your journey and thinking about how, you know, when you've come through as a coach and some of the experience you've had and even the people that you've worked with, what would be some of the key things that you think have stood the test of time?
I think some of the non-negotiables with the coaches that I've worked across are definitely, you know, having a learning outcome, having a structure, having a plan to your sessions, you know, the organization, all of that kind of stuff have been sort of stable throughout for me as a coach. And having that sort of a diet as a coach, if you like, of, you know, the things that you listen to, the things that you read, and all of these things that you're mindful of what you're ingesting, I think have been really consistent for me. But I think the sort of inconsistencies as a young coach is, and me being exposed to lots of different wonderful coaches back then, is, hold on a minute, but he's saying this and she's saying this and they're saying this. And then the older you get, it's no one's right or wrong. I'm just going to take that from them, that from them, that from them, because I agree with that. And you're almost molding it into your beliefs and what you're about as a coach. So I think those things, like the core things, have never changed, never gone away. I think it's just the way that the game has evolved. And I don't know the answer. I don't know. Certainly for me, when I talked about the emotional side of players and that, and the holistic side, I think that is something that we need to embrace. But in terms of the game and evolution, I just think, I don't know. Was it easier a few years ago when it was a bit simpler? I don't know. I don't know if we've complicated things. I don't really know what the answer is. I mean, listening to our coaches when we come back from games, we've got some wonderful, passionate coaches that, as I said before, are able to explore things and come up with some new ideas. And it's like sometimes they're talking in a language that I just don't even understand anymore. It has just moved on so much. I don't know what your thoughts are.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting one. I think, you know, I'd probably, going back on a couple of things you said, I think the first thing that I think there is some wrongs, but yeah. I think there's many rights. And I think we have to be able to identify that there is some wrongs, or rather the wrongs are wrong because of circumstances. And sometimes that's what makes it wrong, rather than it being.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Wrong as a general thing. So I think, you know, the I guess the idea behind what you said is, you know, take what works for you and based on the environment you're working in, the people that you're working with, is probably the message that you're trying to lead with there. I think definitely, in something I always say whenever I'm delivering courses or whenever I'm engaging, is us as coaches, and I say us generalizing, that make the game complicated. Actually, the game is very, very simple. The game is so simple that you wouldn't believe how simple it is. And it's quite simply like, right, Mark's trying to score with my goal and I'm trying to stop him, and he's trying to stop me from doing the same to him. Simple as that.
Directional, invasion, random.
And if you strip it right back to that and you look at it through that lens when you're actually coaching the game, you'll understand that nothing else matters. And everything that you see, whether it's this press or that block and this attack or that attack, These are all just methods used to achieve that core outcome, which is trying to score more than the opposition and stopping them doing otherwise. And I think if you strip it right back to that, I think it just simplifies things so much. And I always go back to this and I say that the power of your questions will dictate the quality of your answers. Rather, the quality of your questions will dictate the power of your answers. So as coaches, what kind of questions are you asking about what you actually need and how it's relevant to the individuals you're working with? And the one thing people always go, oh yeah, my practice didn't work. Well, your practice didn't work because you weren't thinking about the principles when you designed it. You were thinking about a concept, and it kind of, again, over the years, I've become a frequent user of different frameworks, I love to develop frameworks and different kind of visuals to kind of think things through, because that's just how I learn. And you know, one of the things I always talk about is, you know, if you're looking at practice design as an example, well, the only way you're going to get realism if it's directional and it looks like the game. But it doesn't mean you can't coach outside of that. It just means that you can't coach the realism, but you can coach a concept. I.e., you know, I'm not a big fan of rondos as an example, but actually you can teach concepts with rondos. I don't agree with them. I wouldn't use them myself personally, but you can use concepts. I mean, you can teach concepts, and the concepts that you can probably teach in a rondo around press and cover. But the realism will never be there, because actually you defend differently, right? So you can use unrealistic practices, which I wouldn't recommend, but you can use them to teach concepts, which you then have to layer on top through realism of practice, because it's the realism that creates the opportunity for them to implement and apply in context, right? So just, you know, just little things like that along the journey. And, you know, I think the language has changed so much, which, you know, even in the principles of play, what it was probably when you did your, you know, your courses back in the day to what it was when I did mine and what it is now, again, changing. But actually, why are we changing it? it does what it says on the tin. Let's just simplify it. And I think it's the consistent change of language, in which some cases has been for the better, because it's more succinct and more appropriate to depict whatever it is that we're trying to get across. But in other cases, I think we're moving away from what we're needing to kind of detail in the language that we're using and articulate appropriately. So, you know, as you're going through generation to generation of players and then even in coaches, you then start to kind of create disparities between different generations because of the language and how it's changed, when actually, did it need, this goes back to that, you know, that age old question. If it ain't broke, why are we fixing it? Let's keep what's working, and let's develop the things that aren't, right? Like little things that, you know, simple things like, what does creating space really mean? Because back, you know, the suggestion is, you know, we're getting high and wide, but actually when I was coming through, we just used the word dispersal, and it was pretty much clear what dispersal meant. you just spread out, right? But creating space, now it's a gray area. So what does it really mean? And then how, if you now go down the interpretation of what creating space is for a lot of people, well, how do you then distinguish that from what movement is?
Yeah.
So I think it's confusing at times with language. Those are just some thoughts.
I think sometimes there is addition in subtraction. So exactly what you said then about the game being an invasion game, you know, it's directional, it's random. And again, in my early days, you know, of coaching, it would have been, you know, putting down 1,000 different cones and ladders and hurdles and stuff. And I remember one of the coaches when I was working at a center of excellence many years ago said, what a great practice that is. What's it for? What's the purpose? I didn't have an answer for him. In my mind, it was just, I'm just going to try and put something down different each week that looks fun, it looks whizzy. The external people outside, the parents, the other coaches might look and go, cool, yeah, that's good. But there wasn't any real substance behind it in terms of a learning outcome of such. Yeah, so... yeah, it was a bit of a strange one, really, and certainly for me growing up, it would have been, as a player, sort of lines, laps, and lectures, that you're involved in, and no real sort of randomness or something that looked and felt like the real game.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Sometimes that's some of the challenges that people have to, you know, contest with, right? Is whether we have enough insight on what it is, maybe not, but everyone has a perception of what coaching should or could look like. And it just takes me back to an experience where I was coaching about 6-7 years ago now. And every week we just play games. Yes. And, you know, 3 or 4 months into the process, the parents were like, yeah, you know, this looks fantastic. The players are loving it, but actually, when are you going to start coaching? Brilliant. And I just found it interesting. And it was just almost like, well, I know what you think coaching looks like now. But we talked about this recently as well, about the education piece for coaches, right? And not just parents, but just not just players, but supporting the parents in their understanding of what it looks like, but also gauging that and managing the expectations of what that looks like. So I think there is one lens for a lot of coaches on the idea of, right, how can I create an environment or create a session that looks like coaching to the parents?
Yeah.
But actually, sometimes it's hard to justify the relevance of that practice because you're not doing it for the players. Yeah. You're doing it for the visual of what everyone else is seeing.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the challenges that comes with obviously unopposed practice, as an example, is it's probably easier to measure, in which case parents or players look at that and say, yeah, no, it's definitely helping me develop. Whereas if you go down the more opposed element, more game-based approaches, well, it's definitely a lot more challenging to actually put into practice a metric that can actually be utilized to support and identify whether the players are achieving anything, right? In which case, if you're a coach with lesser experience and you're trying to go down that approach, it then poses you the question, well, how are you beginning to measure success if you don't have enough experience and knowledge around what you're looking for in the first instance? So coming back to your point about learning outcomes, and it's something I always say to the coaches, well, it doesn't matter what your practice looks like, but if you've got learning outcomes, you should know what you're hoping to cover within that. Because if I give you a phrase of a theme as an example, and I say, attacking in the wide areas, for yourself, you'll have a perception of what attacking in the wide areas looks like for you, which might be very different to what my perception of that is, which is no right or wrong, but actually fundamentally, because you've got a different perception of it, your coaching and the way that which you guide the players through that journey will be dictated by that, as opposed to what I might guide them through based on that same theme, right? But in any case, if we as coaches know what our learning outcomes are, then the practice doesn't really matter to an extent, because we know what we're hoping to see. Therefore, when we see it, we're going to know we found it. Whereas if you don't know what you're looking for, well, how will you know when you've got it?
Yeah, so I think if you relate it to, you know, my under 10s and when I was playing, the manager, as I said, was, and this is no disrespect, he was a parent, and if it wasn't for him, maybe I wouldn't have had that experience as a grassroots player. And in fairness to him, that's all he'd known as sort of old school constant practices with big traffic cones and, you know, dribble to one and round the other one and up to two and three and so on. But I can't help but think, I wonder if we'd just played matches. I say just, but, you know, just with some challenges in or some variety of different sort of connotations. And I think sometimes, you know, certainly you and I, Yaz, with our sort of FA hats on, and when we go out to do UEFA B in situ visits and stuff, and bless them, some people get so wrapped up in you know what they're delivering, and there's someone coming on. But sometimes I think, just if you're stuck, just go into something that looks like a game. Just come and stand out the way. They're going to enjoy it. You're exposing them to, you know, multiple pressures in a game situation where they're dealing with pressures from behind and the side and the front, and it's down to them to try and fend those defenders off and wriggle out of tight spaces and all of this kind of stuff, which I wasn't exposed to because everything that I did was in isolation growing up. So the contrast was vast when you look at Thursday night training, what that looked like versus the game on the Sunday, was just worlds apart. So I think it's all of those experiences that I try and take in. But I do take your point in terms of some parents that if, you know, if there's no, not that you should have to justify yourself, but if there's no explanation into what you're doing and what you're delivering, then potentially sometimes it could just look like, well, they're just playing a game. What's my son or daughter learning here? They're just playing a match. Whereas you know that there's different outcomes involved.
100%. And like I said, one of the things I always go back to is let's just start being better at checking and understanding of what the players know. If we understand what the players know and think, and we gauge what that looked like when we first engage with them, and then we gauge what it looks like maybe 4 months down the line, 6 months down the line, or however long it is that journey is that they're with you, and just have regular touch points and checkpoints, and you start to build a bit of a bank of knowledge on what this player's understanding was and now is, that will tell you everything you need to know. Because, you know, it's just like life, right? You know, you go through experiences, you go through different things, and all of a sudden the considerations you have for life in general start to begin to develop and change. The question isn't, what considerations are you taking into account, and whether those are right or wrong? It's, well, what considerations are you taking into account, and why are you doing that? Because if I can help you start to understand and process the reasons why you're considering certain things, then maybe, I guess, open your eyes to some of the blind spots of the considerations you might not be experiencing just yet or considering at all. I'm helping, in my opinion, give you the tools to observe and examine problems from a wider perspective. Because if you can observe and examine problems from a wider perspective, you probably become better equipped to identify suitable solutions for the problem you're facing. In which case, you become less dependent on myself and more dependent on your understanding and your ability to process those considerations and how they impact you as an individual, right? Links me back to a conversation I was having with a coach yesterday, and I said, okay, well, what's the first thing that you want players to do when they're out of possession? He goes, press. Okay, go on. I said, go on, well, tell me what press looks like to you. What's the purpose of it? And he said, oh, you know, to put pressure. Yeah, but how? You can't tell me what pressure is for me. So telling the player to press, well, what's the message that we're really sending? How can we be more succinct and more specific about what that looks like? So I put it as, well, let's stop telling players to press, and let's start telling players that player in front of you, whoever it is, do what you need to do to put them under pressure. Because that will change the pressing moment for every individual you go towards, right? At least it will begin to explore different methodology and approach for each. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I think, look, if you look at the FA's principles of play, I don't think they've really changed in a great deal over the years. The names have probably changed, you know, and we use that as a sort of pillar, if you like, to plan your sessions around. And, you know, you'll probably be similar to me in the fact, and there's nothing wrong with what I'm going to say, but, you know, if you had a pound for every session you went out and it was playing out from the back, then, you know, I probably wouldn't be talking to you here. I'd be on my yacht somewhere, traveling around the Caribbean. My point is this, and there's nothing wrong with it. It's how do you want to do that? Because there's a gazillion different ways of playing out from the back. And, you know, if you look at principles of play, defending, one of them that comes up is compactness. But again, what does that mean to you? To me, if I'm being compact with my teams in central areas, it will be the confines of the edges of the 18-yard box. So I want us all to jump inside of that. The pitch does it for you in terms of the references. What's the trade-off? Well, the trade-off is out wide. We're going to have to concede space out there. But at a certain level that I'm coaching in, if I've asked you to be compact or we've agreed on it as a team, then this is what it looks like. And you're so right, because your interpretation and my interpretation of compactness without detail behind it could look completely different. Then you leave yourself open to jargon at half time from the manager or the management team that's, you know, we're not doing this, we're not doing that.
and the dreaded we're not talking enough and all of this kind of stuff comes out. You know, let's have some real rich detail behind it of what's expected and gain clarification, which probably in turn comes back to that creating of that positive environment. You know, and I saw a coach say it the other day with a group of under 14s, I think they were, you know, do you all understand? Good, let's carry on. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Does everyone understand? Because I wouldn't have put my hand up here to say that I didn't understand at 14. I wouldn't have done, especially if the environment was not hostile, but it wasn't warm. And after I'd said that, then I created a situation where one or two looked at each other and said, well, actually, I'm not 100% sure. Okay, so let's spend a little bit of time now making sure or getting everyone skilled up to a level in terms of what we're asking. The trade-off might be we lose a little bit of ball rolling time at the other end or whatever it may be, but let's just make sure we get it right.
But you know what? You're right, and that's the argument that will come back, right? You might lose some ball rolling time, but the thing I always go back to and say is, well, you might lose your ball rolling time, but at least when your ball is rolling, it's rolling because they understand what they're actually doing, in which case you're actually becoming more efficient with it. So, yes, while the numbers suggest, oh, you lost 30 seconds of ball rolling time, well, actually the quality of your ball rolling time probably improves. So it's that, you know, that conversation around quality versus quantity, right? And again, you know, coach asking, do you understand? Does everyone understand? Well, it's not really what you want to know. You want to know, did they understand it in the way that you explained it? So what you're really asking them is, did you understand it the way I explained it? And that question isn't going to be answered by asking, do you understand? So I think, again, it's going back to that process, right? And it's something I'm big on in terms of questions in particular. So how specific can we be with our questions? But before we can be specific with our questions, how specific can we be in getting clarity on what it is we're trying to find out? So I try and move away from that idea of do we understand and try and ask more questions, you know, along the lines of, right, who's confident enough to be able to share back with me what I'm expecting, right? Because you're now leaving that space for, actually, do you know what? I think I've got an idea, yes, but I'm not 100% sure. Or who needs a little bit more clarity on what I've shared or what I've said? Or actually, who, you know, what are your thoughts on what I've shared back?
I think but even if I've got the opportunity in that setting to talk to you and clarify with you, just you, and if you say to me, yeah, so I'm on the right lines, so now I'm a little bit more confident to go, yes, I think I could answer this.
Precisely. And I think it's understanding the difference between, and I get this on courses sometimes, and it's interesting, I was speaking to someone about this the other day. I think there's three types of people that ask questions. There's ones that are genuinely trying to understand. There's ones that are kind of on the right track, so they just want some clarification. And then you've got those other ones who are just asking questions to try and disprove what you suggested you want them to do. And those are the best ones. I tell you, those are the best ones, because when you disprove them, because they're trying to challenge it, and you know what you're talking about and you understand why you're saying what you're saying, they've got no leg to stand on, and you nip that one in the bud, right? Because I'm not going to challenge him again because he actually knows what he's talking about. And that's the thing, the players will do the same thing, right? Players will challenge you because they want to know, right? Coach is saying something. It's not all of them. Some players, they want to know that you know what you're talking about. And I think that's really important. And, you know, often the human nature tells us, we get asked the question, we get our backs up. But actually, when the players ask me questions, I thrive off it, because it actually gives me the opportunity to demonstrate why they should be listening in to some of the things that I'm sharing, because I've actually thought about this myself. And this is my opportunity to present that argument or that point or that discussion, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you're right. And there are, you know, over my years, even in the sort of management role, where sometimes, you know, I've asked for feedback and I'm thinking, do I really want this feedback? Or I'm asking for feedback because, you know, there's a part of me that thinks most of this is going to be positive, whereas if it's negative, I'm not sure how I'll take it. Whereas now, when we talk about respectful challenge, you know, that's different, because it's coming from a good place and someone actually, you know, there was a guy called Grant Downey who's been on our podcast, who's a wonderful man. He's a friend of Gareth Southgate's and a bit of a confidant to Gareth Southgate, but talks about the analogy of two mice in a kitchen. And I'm probably the mouse that would go, wow, there's a big bit of cheese around there. Come on, let's go. But then he's talking about the other mouse that he needed that would say, whoa, hold on, there could be a cat around there. Let's just be careful. So it's that, and it's the other person, because I am very much a starter, not a finisher, a little bit gung-ho, a little bit here, there, and everywhere. And I just need that other mouse just to go, just be careful, there could be a cat around there. Whereas a couple of years ago, a few years ago, 10 years ago, that other mouse might have got my back up, because I would have gone, what are you on about? There's cheese there, let's just go. Come on, we're on the same team here. So respectful challenge, I think, is great. And I think it only comes with, you know, creating that real positive environment. I know we've talked about that a lot today, but how you create that and the stuff that goes into that's another thing. But for me, that's paramount.
I think it's a great point. I think it's a great analogy to use as well, right? Because it's, I think that, you know, what I've taken from that is almost, well, no, I'm not stopping you because I think you're wrong. I'm stopping you because let's just take a second to think as to whether this is the right action to take. Let's weigh this up, right? Let's weigh it up. Let's look at the pros and cons. Let's look at what might is what we're about to do the best next step.
Yeah, I think it's someone pressing the fast forward button for you. Someone's pressing the fast forward button and checking your blind spots. Someone that you trust that can say, oh, hold on, let's just be careful. And that, you know, that might be players in the team that you coach. It might be your co-coach, your assistant coach, whoever it may be. If you've got that relationship where someone can go, oh, hold on, because as nice as it is, how far are you going to get if someone's just agreeing with you all the time and telling you how well you're doing and all of these niceties? You know, the person that's, and I've had it this morning already where someone's gone, just, you know, we've got a big meeting today, just make sure we mention this and this. Wow, brilliant.
I'm just thinking about that then, you know, from a wider perspective, you're looking back on your journey, where would you say it's been some of the most pivotal moments where someone's brought something to your attention that was like, oh, you know what, actually we've got a good point?
I think without a doubt it was working full time within the English FA. 100%, I think, exposed to the amount of CPD that we were exposed to then, when you start talking about things like ages and stages and the emotional side of the game, the psychology involved, behavior management, all of these things, all of these facets that I would just not have thought about before. How you plan and structure sessions, like, and that's over a 10-year period, but some of the stuff that I took from there was just remarkable, really, and has definitely shaped me, I think. Just, yeah, and fair play to the FA, you know, taking time to invest in staff and upskill staff and almost say, look, we're not saying this is 100% right. This is the evidence out there at the minute, and this is what we're sort of going after. And I think, again, those that are involved in grassroots clubs that are listening will go, hold on a minute. Well, I'm working full time and, you know, we train on a Thursday, which is voluntary, and then playing on a Sunday, which is voluntary. And I've got all these, where have we got time for CPD? I get all that. But if you can try and make time, whether that's the start of the season, whether it's, I don't know, going down the pub after the session and taking your laptop or setting up a Zoom call or a Teams call and going, you know, let's strip this back and go, what are we about as a team that we stand for? And I think, you know, getting all of the different stakeholders involved, so definitely the players, getting their input, definitely the parents, as we spoke about them with, you know, oh, you're just playing a game, but actually if you're involved in this process as well, you'll understand that there's more to it. So you know, we really need you guys on the side to support us and stay with us, and these are the key messages that we're going after. So please, you know, make sure that you're in line with what we're telling the boys and girls. Otherwise, that could be really, really confusing and damaging to what we're trying to do. And all of these things, I think, are really important. You know, On the level two UEFA C, certainly UEFA B, you'd have to do your sort of player profiling where you detail a little bit about the individuals that you're working with, but also like a plan, a philosophy of who you are. You know, tell us a bit about you as a coach and about your team. And I think those days are gone where it's the sort of talk and chalk and I do, you tell, as we spoke about earlier. I think probably one of the best examples of that is, you know, the current England manager, Gareth Southgate, who, so I've been told, would sort of hold court with, I don't know, the midfield four, for example. And we spoke about pressing earlier, but, you know, let me gain an understanding of how you four press at your individual clubs. Okay, so here's two ways. So all of a sudden, we've got eight different ways of pressing in the central areas that we can look at. Now, as a consensus, what do you think? Well, I think this, okay, well, maybe let's try it. And I'm paraphrasing wildly, but so I've been told it's definitely, you know, things of that ilk that he would have done in terms of player involvement. You know, and even I cast my mind back when I was sort of playing non-league and you'd have managers that had been at other clubs that would recycle free kicks. You know, this is how we do it. This is how we defend crosses. This is how it's always been done. So this is how I'm doing it. Well, hold on a minute. You know, when I played right back, the goalkeeper that I played with was one of the best in the league. He was 5'9", so small for a goalkeeper. But if you're saying in the defensive third that you show outside and let's deal with the cross, well, I don't really fancy his chances at 5'9", trying to meander his way through some grisly 6'4" strikers. So have you actually consulted your staff, your playing personnel in that? Because he would much prefer in those defensive areas to show inside and deal with a shot. Because actually, they're probably a shot stopper.
It's a great point. And I think, you know, even if, you know, I'm conscious that obviously that might be a new realm, a new territory for coaches to kind of step into and have that consultation, right? So, you know, the challenge that I'd pose to coaches to think about to begin with is, have you even considered that as a possibility before you even manage to consult with them? If you even choose to consult with them, you know, what considerations are you actually putting into place when looking at, right, okay, what the, you know, the decision should be here as to what we're going to do and why we're doing it? And I think that's the key part, right? It's just really establishing it. And the more you can go into it, well, if you're saying you're there to develop your players, if you're saying you're there for a purpose, then more, surely you want more information and guidance on what you can be doing and what might be better suited for the individuals that you're working with. I mean, it just makes sense for me, but, you know,
you have to relinquish power though. Yes, that's the thing. You have to be happy to relinquish some power and not be this person that sort of dictates at the front of the room and you must do this. That can be difficult. That can be difficult, but they're some of the best coaches that I've come across. Steve Kerr, I think you've had some dealings with Steve Kerr, or you've talked about, and we've had conversations about Steve Kerr, the basketball coach. But he talks about connection before correction with players, so having a real deep connection with them, you know, and gaining that understanding, that insight. But then also, I don't know if you've seen it and you can YouTube it, but I'm sure there was a fourth quarter of a basketball match where he's gone to the team, you know, go on then, what are you thinking? And it's like, wow, this is live on TV. He stood back and they, listen, I'm not saying that you do that every single time. And he's obviously got enough credit in the bank to enable that to happen.
But there's also, I think it's incredible. And I think there's two parts that kind of just really jump out at me in what you shared there. And I think the first part is, he's probably created an opportunity or several opportunities in between that happening and when he first engaged with them, where they've been given the platform to be able to do some of that. But he's also probably equally managed their expectations in understanding, hey, I'm not always going to have the answers for you, but we're going to be on a team where we can work through them together. And it's interesting because it then made me think about the conversation with Shaquille O'Neal, and he said that actually that's one of the things that his name out. Phil Jackson did a lot with that team. It's like, you know, I can't help you once you cross the white line was essentially the message, right? It's I'm trusting myself to have prepared you well enough to this point that you've got the skills required and the knowledge of the experience needed to guide yourself through some of the problems that you're not going to get the guidance from me on. And this is why, again, part of my own coaching philosophy linked in back into what you were saying before. You know, a lot of the stuff that we do nowadays is around helping the coaches become better at understanding self, right? And my viewpoint is, well, actually, I want to create players that are interdependent, because the problem is if you're dependent, you're always going to be relying on me. So if I'm not there on match day and it goes wrong, I'm going to get the message of, oh, we would have won if you were there. I don't want to hear that. What I want to know is that you guys did well, whether I was there or not.
And there is an argument to say, isn't there, like, if you've got to sort of control and dictate and kick every ball and tell all of your players what actions to take at whatever time, what's happened at training? You know, what have you been doing on the hour or hour and a half training? Because surely that's the time to, you know, dot the I's and cross the T's. And if you use the school analogy, that's almost like your generic curriculum session. And then the match becomes a little bit like the exam then, doesn't it? Where you kind of stand back. And I'm not talking about, you know, the old adage of let the game be the teacher, when I stand back and don't say anything at all and you work it out, because, you know, you need to recognize also when they need help with prompts and cues and stuff. But yeah, that links into the Steve Kerr stuff of, come on, we worked on this. You're playing in the game live. You can feel it. I'm at the side here. I've got an idea, but what are you seeing? What do you think? Powerful, really powerful.
Yeah. I am conscious of time though, Mark. So question I've got for you is this. If you could go back knowing what you know now to the start of your journey, what's one thing that you wish you knew then that you don't, or that you didn't?
Oh.
It could be more than one thing, but, you know, what are the things that you think, do you know what, I wish I knew this earlier, because this would have just revolutionized everything from minute one.
I think, and it's no one's fault for this, really. I suppose it was the environment I grew up in, et cetera, but I wish I'd have got into academia a little bit earlier and really sort of delved into that wonderful sort of evidence-based stuff that I have done and the readings that I've done over the last couple of years, like 20 years earlier. It's only now, you know, 45, I think it was, I finally got my master's, which, you know, I'm still incredibly proud of being able to get that and, you know, an A license, etc. But maybe 20 years earlier, I don't know, maybe it would have looked different now. But I'm in a wonderful place at the minute. So no real complaints, but that would be the thing. That'd be the thing I'd say, yes.
It goes back to your saying, right? Be curious, not furious.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Having an idea of what you need to unpack and uncover. So, good stuff, Mark. Really appreciate your time. Do you want to just give a quick shout out to, you know, where people, or quick plug as to where people can get into your podcast?
Yeah, I don't really do lots on the socials anymore, but Grassroots Football Coach, I think similar to yourself, you can find us on all the different platforms and channels, and there might be a special one coming out with yourself on there, Yaz, at some point. So that'll be one to look out for sure.
Awesome. Mark, I really appreciate your time today, man. Really enjoyed the conversation. I'm sure we'll connect again soon.
Cheers, Yaz. Thank you.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at The Coaches Network or on Twitter at The Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.